But thank you all for coming. My name is Steve Berner, and I'm a family physician in Oklahoma City. The first verse that comes to mind to me when I think about this topic is Ephesians 5:15-16. That says, "Therefore, be careful how you walk, not as unwise men, but as wise, making the most of the time, because the days are evil." And so what's our motivation to walk carefully? Well, it says right there, the days are evil. And I don't think many of us would argue with that. I mean, with all of the social pathology that you see played out day to day on the media, the broken lives, the impact of sin on our culture and society, that part of it is easy. I think we can all agree that the days are evil. But in your estimation, are these days more evil than those that came before? Thinking back to when these words were written or penned, without the use of a word processor, I might add. Are the days more evil now? What do you think? A few opinions? Who thinks, yes, they're more evil? Who thinks, no, it was same now as then? Okay, a little more prominence then. And why? Those of you who think it's the same now as then, why do you think that?
Just,
okay. Nature of man still the same. Okay. Any other thoughts? Pardon me?
Romans had more similar problems as we have now.
Okay.
Augustus. I mean, homosexuality, you know, failed marriages, that people were not staying together, they had all sorts of illegitimate children.
Right.
You know, they couldn't feed their people economically, it was a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
Same situation at the time of Augustus.
Right.
And the early emperors of Rome, when Christianity was just beginning.
Right.
So this gentleman observes correctly that the Romans had a lot of the same problems we have now, a lot of the same social ills. So,
men are the same, but the days, I think, are more evil.
Okay. Men are the same, but the days are more evil. Can you explain that?
There's more men. Technology, things are more accessible, and it's just more obtainable than
right. It's easier to sin and remain anonymous. That's part of the deal. Okay. So since our time is limited and he's more active, maybe we should be more active. That'd be one application. Any other thoughts as to why today might be more evil than the days? So attacks on Christianity. Nation of Islam comes to mind. It's available in every study and living room in the country.
Didn't Jesus say things will wax worse and worse?
Yeah, Jesus said things will get worse and worse, like labor pains, you know. That's true. Yes, sir?
I think it's a little bit less evil because in Jesus' time, the Holy Spirit wasn't released freely into man.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's free. It's been free since his death.
Yep.
So I would much rather live now than...
Right. So you'd rather live now because we have the resource of the Holy Spirit, which... years ago was not available, at least not in the same way. So, yes, sir.
I think that one guy said that man hasn't changed, and that's true. I think that sin is sin, and that the same types of grotesque things we see in this culture were seen at the time of Christ, or the thing is at the time of the apostles, but I think that during this time of mass media, of a 24-hour news cycle, that there is an intensification, which I think Scripture speaks about.
Mm-hmm.
It's going
mm-hmm.
to be intensified, and I think mm-hmm. it's being intensified.
So the issues are the same, but the intensity is greater now than it was then. So,
Paul wrote in 2 Timothy, he says, "But evil men and impostors will proceed from bad to worse, being deceived."
Okay. Well, sounds like we're all agreed the days are evil. And the other part is open to discussion. I think there are good points on both sides of that issue. Richard Swenson is a physician who has written a book. I think he actually wrote it back in the 90s sometime. It's been revised recently, called Margin. And a lot of my comments today will be from his book. But he spends several chapters in this book pointing out that progress has brought about one universal symptom, and that is pain. He says that for every problem that has a solution, there's a solution that brings another problem. And few know where we're heading, but it's universally acknowledged that we are careening along at a breakneck speed. And I think that's the intensity remark that we're referring to. And boy, all you have to do is just listen to the news out of Washington, D.C., and it's clear that, you know, the wheels are coming off the wagon, but it's still going faster and faster. So I think we can all identify with that aspect, that at least in some ways, these days are evil in maybe a unique manner. I'm a physician, and in my office every day I see patients where the wheels are coming off their wagon. They're stressed, they're in debt, they're victims or perpetrators of broken relationships. There are children who are suffering from bad decisions by their parents in greater and greater numbers, even within the church, of course. So I'm not just talking about unbelievers, but people who really should know better. So in those ways, I think these days are perhaps evil in a unique way. So Dr. Swenson came up with several axioms, again, talking about the fact that these days are pretty evil. Axiom one is that progress works by differentiating our environment, thus always giving us more and more of everything faster and faster. And this is mainly good. Some examples would be a tree. If we differentiate a tree into lumber and then into a dimension lumber or whatever with furniture, toothpicks, that's progress, and that helps us. Cotton can be differentiated into products, into cloth, into textiles, into clothing. In our ministry, we can break down continents into nations and nations into people groups, and we can be more effective in reaching the lost for Christ. But what happens when the workplace differentiates our work so that it's also intruding into our family time, our vacation time, our time with our kids, our man-to-man time? What do we do with that differentiation? And that is definitely changing in these days. What do we do when subprime loans become differentiated into investment derivatives that nobody understands and that have no basis in real value? Progress gives us more and more of everything faster and faster. So axiom two is that the spontaneous flow of progress is toward increasing stress, change, complexity, speed, intensity, and overload. And I think of my own life. I'm a family medicine doctor, so I see patients all day. I go to the office, and the way I describe it is I hop on this treadmill, and I just run as fast as I can until we're done, and then I go home. And I'm sure many of you can identify with that. It's faster and faster, and do more with less. And it's a stressful. Progress leads to stress. And I try to contrast that to, you know, David's experience as a shepherd, for instance, the author of most of our Psalms. How did he come up with those insights? He had time to reflect. He had time, even as king of Israel, when schedules were regulated by the hours of the day and the seasons of the year rather than the clocks and the watches on our wrists. So it's different. The days are evil. Axiom three is that all humans have physical, mental, emotional, and financial limits that are relatively fixed. And that's just a biology thing. There are limits, and those limits can be expanded, contracted, expanded for a time, but from the bigger picture, there are limits in all of those, each of those areas. Axiom four, the profusion of progress is on a collision course with human limits. That makes obvious sense. Axiom five, on the unsaturated side of their limits, humans can be open and expansive. However, on the other side, the rules totally change. We become irritable and discouraged and depressed, and our kids interpret that as unloving or unaccepting, and et cetera, et cetera. Dr. Swenson states that no one has time to listen, much less to love. And he asks the question, is God pro-exhaustion? We should ask that question. Doesn't he lead people beside the still water anymore? How many of you in the room, let's see how to divide this up, are less than 20? 20 or less, put it that way. Quite a few. How many are 20 to 40? Okay. And how many are 40 and above? Oh, my goodness. Okay, so we have a lot of wisdom in the room. That's good. Well, here's another question. I'll be interested in your input. Regarding our use of time and our stewardship of time, are these things helpful, more helpful, or less helpful? Let's talk about the internet, for instance. On the whole, looking at it, we've already talked about the pornography issue, the access to that side of life. But on the whole, do you think it's more helpful or less helpful that we have the internet available to us?
More?
Yes, sir. No. Okay. Sounds like most of you think it's helpful. And in what ways is it helpful primarily? What comes to mind? Yeah. That can be a little overwhelming. But that's right. It's information. That's the deal. That's the coin of the realm, isn't it? Is information. And we have instant access to all sorts of information. Any other thoughts why it's helpful?
Yeah, if you include email in that, it really pushes hard on some of us anyway.
Yeah. Okay, that's the next question. Email. Do you think that's more helpful or less helpful regarding our stewardship of time? On the whole, looking at the whole big picture. And some of you folks have never been around when there wasn't email. So you can tell us what you've heard from other people, but what do you think?
Depends on what email you get.
Depends on what email you get. That's a good point. Okay.
Really screw email or faithful help?
Depends on how much email you get. Okay.
Actually, it's very helpful.
Very helpful in what way?
I can communicate with my colleagues because everybody checks their email very frequently.
Right.
Without having to get up and go to wherever I need to go.
Mm-hmm.
That's what saves a huge amount of time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, time saver, isn't it? You can communicate with a lot of people very quickly. And that's part of the problem. You can communicate with a lot of people very quickly. You know, if you're in any kind of leadership position in business or ministry, before there was a chain of command and, you know, a few people had access to you. But now everyone on your mailing list has access to you. They can copy. All those things show up and you've got to deal with them. You've got to sort out the wheat from the chaff. In my email from the hospital, I get information that the gift shop in the hospital is selling Brighton bags 20% off this week. And I had to find out what Brighton bags were, and I found out they're ladies' purses. And, you know, here I'm getting this email about ladies' purses, and it's not once. I mean, that's something we get multiple times. Yes, sir?
Well, it's a mixed bag because I think the higher tech we move toward, the lower touch we're becoming.
Exactly.
And so we're losing touch with one another. Email is great for disseminating information, but I can't feel through email.
Right.
So that's like a really misconstrued piece. It's like the text messaging. You know, that's a great tool.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a teenage son that they are creating their own little community. Text messaging, and as say we're all sitting at this table, and he's got several of his friends here. Instead of carrying on conversations with each other and learning how to communicate, and
right,
they're in this,
right,
and they may be sitting right here, and he's talking to him,
right,
instead of talking.
So the last two comments, for the sake of the tape here, we're losing the human touch in many of these communications, and we're even losing the direct person-to-person communication.
Say that. I mean, you're looking at a long-term deal, or maybe not. When that's gone?
Yeah, that's exactly right. What was your point?
With a computer, you need to be very careful on what you save on your computer.
Mm-hmm.
If it's something very private or if it's something to do with your identity, there people can actually hack into your computer.
Right. There's nothing private on computers, and that worries me. And let me tell you a little bit about where I'm coming from, because I've been through a major transition in my life in the last 2 months. After 30 years of practicing medicine in one form or the other, we've gone to the electronic medical record. You know, it's a wonderful tool. Privacy, though, is one of the huge issues we worry about. This is intranet. It's a system-wide thing. It isn't internet. But nonetheless, I mean, medical information is very private, and we all worry about the access to that. But more than that, it has changed my workflow, and it has changed my relationship with my patients, because instead of, you know, sitting or standing there eye to eye, focused, you know, listening to what's going on, thinking, next question, what's going on here, how can I help this person, I'm, you know, typing over here and then looking to the patient, and I'm kind of half turned and I'm trying to get something done here. The way I write prescriptions now is on the silly keyboard, and if I can't do it, I get frustrated, it takes longer, and I'm focusing on that. And I'll get better. I mean, I'm getting better. But nonetheless, there will be, in my practice, my interaction with my patients, a permanent change based on the technology. And I think it's a good thing to do. There's safety, patient safety issues that are involved. There's all sorts of information, drug interactions that's available. I mean, it's a good move. I'm pro computerized medical record. But we have to realize the downside, that there is a downside. Jerry, did you have a comment?
Yeah. I think what we're doing, and especially in the realm of discipleship, is program-based instead of person-based.
Okay.
Every church has a discipleship program. The discipleship program doesn't work because discipleship is man-to-man.
Right.
Person-to-person.
Right. So his comment is discipleship programs don't work. It's not a program, it's a relationship. And if we take the relationship out of the interaction, then we're probably not doing ourselves very much good. I had a conversation with lunch with Steve Genheimer, Dr. Steve Genheimer, who's one of my friends from Oklahoma City area, and he's not only the son of missionaries, but the grandson of missionaries, and he had an observation about a project his dad's working on. Steve, you probably should come up here so they can hear it. I asked him just to kind of explain what's going on there regarding not even face-to-face communication, but a record of communication. So,
my grandparents met on the boat going out to southern Africa in the 1920s. Single man and a single woman, and then they struck up this relationship, but then they went their separate ways and communicated by letter for the next 2 years. My grandfather actually proposed to my grandmother by letter, and 6 weeks later, he got a letter back saying yes. But which is a whole, I mean, talk about email, I mean, talk about lack of face-to-face. They wrote letters to each other once a day for years and kept diaries. And my dad now has 50 pounds of communications from my grandparents that he's going through and putting into some sort of order. But they would write 12, 16-page letters to each other, expressing their heart. And I guess the point you're trying to make, Steve, is that back then people really thought through and tried to in communication, in writing, what was on their heart. And I think we've lost that a lot of that today.
Exactly. Yeah, and we're losing the record. I mean, once, you know, it's email, it's gone, or, you know, Facebook, whatever. So I thought that was a good observation about something we're losing here in the process. It's interesting, the Empire State Building was built without computers. The Hoover Dam was built without computers. Mount Rushmore was carved without computers. But progress is giving us more of everything faster and faster. Computers, I think the World Trade Center, you know, that was built in the 60s, and so that was part of the benefit of computers, the time they were built, the highest building in the world. But a different sort of progress brought them down, and that's the kind of progress that really soaks in that the days are evil. And we've already talked a little bit about how these days are just as evil as they were back in the time of Christ or in the days of Noah when, you know, people were marrying and giving in marriage up until the time that the floodwaters rose. And so, again, as we think in terms of ages and epochs, how are these days evil? Why are these evil days looking at, you know, the work of God among men? Anything else come to mind other than the depravity of man and our problems are just as bad as the Romans, which are very valid points?
Well, the problem is most people don't think they're worse. They aren't Christians.
That's true, but most evaluate progress as progress. Right, we're kind of losing the culture. Yes, sir.
We have less time till the second coming.
Yeah, and that's the thing that occurs to me. 1 Peter 5:8, be of sober spirit, be on the alert. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, seeking those whom he may devour. And so Satan, you know, he's on the way to the fiery pit, but he's not there yet. And he's certainly active in our lives and in our culture and in our society. And so these are certainly evil days. So that brings us to the point of priorities, because if these days are evil, and if we're to look carefully how we walk, then how do we look carefully? And part of that's by establishing priorities. And one other way to think about it is to ask the question, you know, when will the days no longer be evil? Well, that'll probably be when Christ returns. That's one way to look at it. Look carefully how we walk. The Amplified says, live purposefully and worthily and accurately. New Living Translation says, so be careful how you live. The Message says, so watch your step, use your head. And then it tells us in verse 16 that we're to make the most of our time. King James says, redeeming the time. Amplified says, buying up each opportunity. So another question is, what are things we can do during this era before Christ's return that we won't have an opportunity to do once he comes back? What do you think? What can we do now that we can't do as soon as he appears? Yes. That's right. We both can be saved and be involved in the salvation of others. Obvious answer. Any other things? Can we be a dad to our children and raise them up in heaven? I don't think so. I mean, we'll recognize each other, you know, that'll be good. Can we love our wives as Christ loved the church once we get to heaven? I don't think so. We'll be loving and praising Christ, and we'll all be in the same boat there. So there are some things that, you know, that focuses our attention. This is our opportunity. We're to look carefully how we walk. The days are evil. There are some things we can do now that won't be available to us later. Another message in the Bible, and especially for younger guys, it's hard to really internalize this, but life is brief. James 4:14. We're just a vapor. Psalms 90 verse 10 is, for the days of our life, they contain 70 years, or if due to strength, 80 years, yet their pride is but labor and sorrow. For soon it is gone and will fly away. Psalms 90 verse 12, so teach us to number our days. In Psalms 103, 15 and 16, as for man, his days are like grass. So life is brief. And another question, I'm sorry I'm asking so many questions, but I told you I had as many questions as answers in this workshop, but y'all are doing a good job. If we're to buy up the opportunities that exist during these days, what's our currency? What is it that we're paying to buy up the opportunities?
Time.
Time, okay.
Other opportunities.
Other opportunities, like?
You might exchange the opportunity to witness for an opportunity to,
make more money.
Yeah,
exchange witnessing time for earning time, maybe. Any other thoughts? What's our currency? Our lives, right? Our own plans, our own objectives. If they're Christ's objectives, they're going to be focused on these things we've talked about: winning souls and growing in Christ and raising our kids and loving our wife. Philippians 2, 4 through 8 says, don't merely look out for your own personal interests, but also for the interests of others. Have this attitude in yourselves, which was also in Christ Jesus. He emptied himself. He took the form of a bondservant, and he was obedient to the point of death. Those scriptures are kind of hard, aren't they? But they convince us what's important in life. To quote John Crawford, the way up is down, and it takes a strong man to become weak. And that kind of ties in with our Thursday night message by Kent Humphreys. Those of you who are here, we need to become like little children. So time is precious, and we shouldn't waste it without thinking. 1 Corinthians 4:2 says, in this case, moreover, it is required of stewards that they be found faithful. We want to be faithful with our use of time. And we all get frustrated in this area. I assume that's why you're here. We may have invented the clock and the stopwatch, but God created time. When did he do that, by the way? When did he create time?
In the beginning.
In the beginning, yeah. Yeah. When did he create earthly time? When he separated the sun from the moon and the earth and he hung everything in orbit. Then all of a sudden we have these days. And we've worked with it ever since. Let me see if I can find a quote here. Yeah, in 200 BC, Roman playwright Plautus, I've heard of him, but that's about it, he wrote a verse cursing the sundial. You know, there's a sundial right out there. I can see it right now. Have you noticed the sundial? And he said of an instrument like that, the gods confound the man who first found out. He was a pre-Christian, so we talked about the gods. who first found out how to distinguish hours, confound him too, who in this place set up a sundial to cut and hack my days so wretchedly into small parts. So I guess the days were evil back then in terms of time pressure, because the sundial just went too fast for this guy. And yet here we're talking about nanoseconds. And Adam Clark in his commentary wrote that time is that on which eternity depends. So it's important how we use it. The useful illustration that I just ran across in preparing for this talk is that of rocks and pebbles that's used by Stephen Covey in his series, One Minute Manager and others. Rocks and pebbles. Anybody know what I'm talking about? Some of you have heard it, okay. For those of you who haven't, it's not original with him. Apparently, this may have happened. I don't know if it did. It's a good illustration anyway. But a philosophy professor went into his classroom with a large mayonnaise jar full of large stones up to the brim with these great big rocks. And he asked the class, is this jar full? And they could see you couldn't add any more stones. And so they answered yes. And then he proceeded to take from under the table a jar of small gravel and poured it in and shook the jar. And sure enough, there was room for more in the jar. And asked again, is the jar full? And some said yes and some said no. So then he pulls out a container of sand. And same thing, he sifts it in between the small pebbles and asked the class, what do you think? Is it full? And at this point, they kind of wised up and they said, probably not. So sure enough, he brought out a container of water and he poured it in, and it displaced the air between the grains of sand, and then indeed the jar was full. And so then he asked the class, what do you think the moral of the story is? And those of you who haven't heard the story, what do you think the moral of the story is? Anybody want to volunteer? Well, I'll tell you the punchline. Someone said, well, the answer is, you know, no matter how busy we get in life, there's always room for more. And that's a good observation. But he said, no, the answer is, if you want to get the rocks in, you've got to put them in first. Because if you put all that other stuff in first, there's not going to be room for the same number of rocks. And so it's a good illustration when we think about priorities. You know, what are the rocks? What are the non-negotiables in our life that we want to accomplish first? Because those are the things we should make priorities, and we should live our life accordingly, spend our time accordingly, write checks and spend our money accordingly based on the rocks in our life. So in thinking that through, what are the rocks in your life? What are things that you're not going to do without? Perhaps based on things you've been exposed to this weekend or in your life experience, what are some rocks? And I'm thinking activities here, maybe. That would be kind of an application of priorities, yeah.
Quiet time,
okay, that's good. Time in the Word, time alone with God. Yes.
Prayer,
yeah, the basics. We want those in there, in that jar, don't we? The rocks, what else?
Family,
okay. Wife, kids, those go up there somewhere, don't they? I've put a list in the handout there of priorities, and you know, we've all seen these lists before, and it's instructive, but it isn't necessarily mutually exclusive. I mean, God obviously is our first priority. God's a jealous God. He desires our first and our best, and several verses there illustrate that fact. And then our wife. We're to love our wife as Christ loved the church, Ephesians 5:25. But just because we love God with all our heart and all our soul and all our mind, it doesn't mean that we love our wife any less. Love is one of those commodities that multiplies the more it's used, and that's kind of God's economy. So God is our number one priority, but our wife is certainly very important, and so are our children. 1 Timothy 5:8, Ephesians 6:4, we're to provide for our family. Ministry, that you know goes without saying at this conference, obviously. Job's important, too. 2 Thess 3:10, if any man will not work, neither let him eat. It's kind of important. You know, we should provide meals for ourselves and for our family. And then all these things flow from that. I mean, health issues, if we blow that, then we've kind of blown the battle, and that includes rest as well as nutrition and exercise and all those things. Time for fellowship, time for rest. Rest is in there somewhere. Recreation is in there somewhere. Scott's here. Scott's my son, and I asked him, he and his buddy were spending time before we were getting ready to come back here this afternoon, what he was doing. And I think the answer was, we were just wasting time on the computer. And my answer was that he was doing some intentional loafing. I mean, he decided they needed some downside. So that's another way to describe that. But that is important, and we'll talk a little bit about that more, I hope, before we get to the end here. So goals, having determined that we want to put the large rocks in first, we have to decide exactly what those are and what the what activities flow from that. And we should have life goals that are general, like Romans 8:29. We want to be conformed to the image of Christ. We want to be filled with the fruit of the Spirit, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, self-control. And then there may be specific goals. Luke 10:9 is one of my specific goals. It says, heal the sick and tell them the kingdom of God has come. Luke 10:9. And we should develop these goals with some perception of what it is that God has made unique in our situation. What do we have to offer? And in what way can we offer it that maybe the guy sitting next to you can't, or maybe nobody else in this room can? And so it isn't just a matter of kind of mechanistically picking out verses and putting them down, but thinking through how God is leading you, how God has gifted you, how God has brought you to this point through experiences in life. And as a result of that, then, you know, what rocks do you want to hold on to in order to contribute to others? And then goals should be stepping stones to accomplish our life mission. And many of us have life verses. I hope you do. If not, this would be a good time to think that through. I've listed several options there. Philippians 3:10, that I may know him. Acts 20:24, finish my course in the ministry that God has given. 2 Timothy 2:2, familiar and trust to faithful men who will be able to teach others also. Isaiah 58:10 through 12, raise up the old waste places. And Micah 6:8, walk humbly with our God. And then, of course, the other thing that's helpful is to make it manageable, is to break it down into long-range, intermediate-range, and short-range goals. I might have the long-range goal after this conference of being more intentional at getting God's Word into my life. Short-range goal would be to join a Precepts Bibleship study or get the TMS out. And you know, that's the thought there. So long-range, short-range, intermediate goals. And areas of setting goals based on Luke 2:52, favor with God, that's the spiritual aspect. Favor with man, social. Wisdom would be mental, and that includes education, career, finances, and physical, as I mentioned, health, sleep, and recreation. So I have another handout here, and again, I apologize, I probably won't have one of these for everybody, but someone will kind of take those from that direction. And you want to take them from that direction. These are courtesy of Jim Kennedy. I came across these in my file and looked it over and decided there's really no way to enhance this. And I asked Jim if we could use it, and he said, sure, fine. All his stuff's available for anybody to use. So this is a form that on one side includes this kind of goal process, the other a chart on setting some of these long-term, intermediate, and short-term goals. And we're going to take some time to do this because... Ideally, you should take at least half a day to go through this process, but I want to give you the advantage since we're at a retreat. I realize it's late Saturday and we've eaten, but let's spend just a few minutes. It's about time to eat again, that's right, working on short-term, intermediate, long-term goals. And what I'd like to do is if you choose a long-term goal area, before you choose other long-term goal areas, go ahead and choose an intermediate goal and a short-term goal. Because when we get back together, I'd like to share that just so we can kind of cross-pollinate some of the ideas in these areas. So any question on this is the work part of the workshop. Any questions? Okay. Well, let's spend just a few minutes doing that, and we'll have a time of sharing. Answer a question, what's the spiritual in and out? The in part is intake, time in the Word, so on. Out is outgo, which is basically ministry, evangelism, that sort of thing. So it's like spiritual breathing, in and out. Okay, judging from the noise level of the room, sounds like y'all have had time to kind of think it through and talk about it. So would anyone be willing to share just some examples for us, long-term, intermediate range, and short-term goals in any of these areas? Yes, sir.
Yeah, I'm moving from Colorado Springs to Houston, Texas, and I'm thinking as far as... this is physical, okay. On the physical side, You know, I'd love to be able to climb all the 14ers, but I don't live there anymore and not acclimated anymore. So I thought, well, maybe I can help people in Houston, you know, become more physically fit. That could be maybe an outreach, too, for Christ.
Okay. Sounds like fun. Good. Very good example. Any others? Long-term, intermediate, and short-term. Help the rest of us stimulate our thinking. Yes, sir.
I have a son that is going to graduate, so I've got a short-term goal to try to disciple him as much as possible in that remaining 6 months.
Okay. How old is your son? Okay. So an 18-year-old is about to graduate, so that is definitely a short-term goal. Anything you're going to do, you better get with it. That's a good example. Any others? Long-term, intermediate, or short-term? Come on, y'all had 10 minutes at least. Yes?
The only section I got done was with the short-term, and I feel like being light to them.
Okay.
Let my light shine forth.
Okay. So excellent short-term goals. Finish MBA, I don't know how short-term that is. How long will that take you to do? Okay, that's short term. And develop a relationship, that's good socially. Memorize additional verses in the TMS, that's a relationship with God, that's pretty concrete. Exercise spiritually, maybe lose a couple of pounds, that'd be good. And then to develop these perchance mentoring relationships. So those are excellent, concrete, short term, doable, personal, practical, possible, all those things. So I think you all get the idea. But, you know, the challenging part is not, well, yeah, it's coming up with them sometimes, but the bigger challenge is to take the time to sit down and do this. I mean, just like then, I didn't time it exactly, but, you know, we had 10 minutes or so. And it's hard to focus. And, again, this is part of the distraction I'm talking about. We're very uncomfortable with no input, just sitting and waiting on the Lord. Our culture doesn't do that well, not for very long. And yet I think for this sort of activity, we need to do that. We need to sit quietly and wait on the Lord and pray and read the Word and pray and write and respond to Him. And so it's a process. So I hope that you all will take this and set aside a half day. A half day is a long time, but if it keeps you from heading in the wrong direction, it's a good investment. And you should do that every year. Usually at the beginning of the year, I found that helpful. And then you should review this at least quarterly because I found when I don't do that, the next year comes around, I set my goals, and they're the same goals as they were last year because I haven't made progress because I haven't been intentional. We've heard that word, haven't been intentional in setting goals. So I hope you'll consider that as an application. Set aside a half day, pray it through, abandon all distractions, and take your Bible and ask God, am I heading in the right direction? If so, great. Boy, the confidence gained in having thought that through and knowing it is tremendous. If not, well, you don't want to head in the wrong direction. I mean, we've talked about the days are evil, the time is short. So why should we be heading the wrong direction and seeking the wrong goals? So we need to go hard after it, and that brings up the other issue here of balance and margin. Refer to it a little bit earlier, but do you think there will ever be a time in life when you can pray as much as you want to or fill in any other spiritual activity, witness, disciple men, read the Bible? And the answer is probably no. I mean, when we think about it, again, you know, the importance of those activities is so great. And this fact, coupled with the observation that we made earlier, that progress brings us more of everything faster and faster, leads to guilt and frustration. And that's another advantage of having thought it through. If we're working on the rocks and we don't have time for the pebbles or the sand, we're free. I mean, we've done what God told us to do first, and we're letting Him handle the details of what we can't get done. But we know we're investing our life in the important things. So one question is balance something we should strive for? And I'll answer this one, yes. From the long haul. It's the way you finish well. If you don't mind being like a Roman candle and just, you know, flaming out, and, you know, some lives are like that and God can lead people that way, and that's good. if God leads him that way. But I'm reminded of the story of the old-time evangelist, and God gave him a message and a horse, and he killed the horse. And when he killed the horse, he couldn't promote the message. So we need to kind of consider, are we doing that in our own life? And another dimension that affects our use of time is energy. And those of you 40 and above know what I'm talking about, and really all of us know what I'm talking about. You know, we think we've got time to do something tomorrow, but if we, you know, burn the candle at both ends today, what will the quality of that time be when we can finally focus on whatever that activity is? That's why, generally, quiet time is most effective in the morning, because we're giving God the best of our day before all the distractions and before the fatigue sets in. So, you know, that's in the Bible, and that, you know, Jesus did that while it was yet early. He went out and found a place by himself and prayed. We can do it other times, but are we giving God our first and our best? So the first graph you see there is, you know, a very simple thing. The point in the middle is called balance. The shaded area on the left is reserve, and the shaded area on the right is deficit. And the intersecting arrows there you see are responsibility and energy. And as time goes on and responsibility goes up, our energy goes down. And so from a big perspective, we need to be sure that those things are balanced out. If we're operating in deficit, if we're irritable, if we're not accomplishing the rocks, then we need to kind of crank back on something. We either need to, you know, cut down on responsibility or figure out a way to increase our efficiency and energy so we can accomplish it over the long term. The next illustration is probably not totally what I wanted to represent there, but it is use of time kind of as the ongoing axis, and as time goes on, we get better and better, but then things happen. And the early stages of that are kind of what we've been talking about to some degree, Ephesians 5, 15, 16, doing things efficiently. And that means have a calendar, use a calendar, think ahead, spend a half day in prayer and planning, all these technical aspects of determining the rocks and then the pebbles and then the sand and doing the important things first. The second part is priorities. The first part is doing things efficiently. So that's the blank there, doing efficiently. The next is doing the right things efficiently. And as we mature, we kind of gain some understanding of what's important. What do I need to be doing efficiently, but what's the right thing? Realizing we're making choices and we're, you know, abandoning good things that God's not leading us to do. Matthew 6:33, seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. And then there comes a point, though, in the midst of all that, that the next little divot there is the point at which we lose control. And that's where you kind of say, I give up. I can't handle all this. I can't do this anymore. And not all of us have ever reached that point in life, but most of us, you know, who've been around a while have, more than once. And if you reach that point because you've done things efficiently and you've done the right things efficiently, and you're still out of control, well, that's okay. That's when you listen to God, and that's the right-hand arrow there. That's when we wait on God and listen to God. But if we're stressed out and marginless and ineffective in our relationships because of poor choices that we've made, then we need to go back and look at the technical aspects of, are we really working efficiently? And then the priority aspect, are we doing the right things efficiently? So it kind of helps me to understand that, you know, even though we do everything correctly, we're operating based on priorities. Sometimes, oftentimes, and predictably, things will be out of control. And that's not bad. That just means, okay, now we realize we don't have the resources and we get to trust God. So am I communicating with that one? The idea is we can do everything right, but that doesn't mean that we're going to live an easy life. And by the way, thinking of margin, the margin exists for the kingdom. It doesn't exist for our self-preservation, but it exists for the kingdom so that we're available. So financially, if we have some money in the bank and God calls us to short-term missions, we can do that. If we have our life set up where we can get away for a week or two and do something that short-term missions or otherwise, then we can do that. If a family member calls and has an emotional need that we can meet, we can do that if we're not cratered ourselves, because we can get so, you know what I'm talking about, so busy, so wound up that we're not usable. So therein lies the idea of margin. It isn't selfish at all. It exists for the kingdom. Luke 16:10, he who is faithful in a very little thing is faithful also in much. And John 7:17, if any man is willing to do his will, he will know of the teaching whether it is of God or whether I'm speaking for myself. So do the little things well, get the technical part right, get the goals and priorities right, and then we get to trust God, having done the work in the earlier stages. Psalms 127:1-2 is a passage familiar to most of us. Unless the Lord builds the house, they labor in vain who build it. Unless the Lord guards the city, the watchman keeps awake in vain. It is in vain that you rise up early and go late to rest, eating the bread of anxious toil, for he gives to his beloved sleep. So, the Lord builds the city, the Lord guards the city, and we're participants in the process. Issues regarding margin, and again, we're back to Dr. Swenson's book here. I hope you'll consider, it's a NAVPRESS book, by the way, so I hope you'll consider reading that if these are issues you're facing in your life or if people you're helping are facing these issues. The symptom, as we discussed earlier, is pain. The diagnosis is overload, and the prescription is margin. And overload has to do with physiology. There's a physiologic stress mechanism, the fight or flight thing that most of us learned about in school, that, you know, you get stressed out to a certain level and you decompensate. And that's what the next illustration covers, and this is actually from the book. At certain point, with increased stress, human performance increases. But there's a point beyond which, with more stress, our performance decreases. And this is God-given. This is physiologic. This is undeniable. Again, I see it every day in my office. And so if we're becoming less and less effective, even though we're working harder and harder, it's something to think through, that maybe we've blown our margin, which is the difference between our load and our capacity. Overload in the United States is like poverty in India. It is everywhere and inescapable. And in thinking about this, you know, all I can relate to primarily is my own experience doing what I do in Oklahoma City, metropolitan area. But in my discussion group was Rick, who, I don't know if Rick's here. No, I think he's across the way learning how to raise older children. But he's a farmer in Missouri. And I asked him, is your life hectic? And he said, yeah. And trying to do more and more with less. The margins are smaller in farming, so you have to work harder, farm more acres. So much is out of your control. Weather is one. He was flooded out in 93 or whatever, lost all their livestock and everything else. And so as a result, he said he spends a lot of his time worrying about things that never happen. 90% of things he worries about don't happen. So 90% of his worry time is wasted, and he identified that as an issue in his effectiveness. So whether we're farming or in Oklahoma City trying to practice medicine, I think most of you will agree that overload is like poverty in India. It's everywhere, and it's inescapable. And our pain may be manifested as fatigue or depression or hostility, but we shouldn't misdiagnose it as weakness or apathy or lack of commitment. And this is an issue sometimes in high-powered, focused ministries. We want to be committed, but we don't all have the same gifts and abilities, do we? And that's why our goals and priorities should come from God, as led by our mentors, our leaders. But we need to be convinced they're from God, not from a human being. Because he made us, he knows our gifts and abilities, and he knows what we should be doing as priorities. Neither, however, should the fact that we all have limits be an excuse for laziness, because it's clear that serving God and serving his people is costly. And so we're not talking about a pain-free existence here. We're talking about being available to God as much as we can by looking ahead and planning and doing the first things first. Margin, like I mentioned, is a space between our load and our limits. It's something held in reserve for unanticipated situations. It's the space between breathing freely and suffocating. We need margin in four areas: emotional, physical, time, and finances. And most of those are the source of, or the topic of other workshops here. We're focusing on time. We're encouraged to have nanosecond efficiency, and I can really relate to this with our recent electronic medical record transition. Improving productivity in the workplace is the equivalent of bodybuilding in the gym, and efficiency is the steroid. Speed and efficiency are the keys to productivity, and productivity is the key to success. But of course, we must have quality. And boy, that's true in medicine. I mean, you must have quality. There's just no other option. And yet, the pressure is to do more and more with less and less. And my work is interesting because where we work, we have, I don't know, 50% overhead, plus or minus. And so if I cut back 50% without making other changes, then I'm not taking home a thing. I'm not feeding my family. So when I cut back to maybe three-fourths time, I've cut my income in half. Conversely, having covered the overhead, I could always work a little more and earn more money. And that's the real temptation, you know, stay a little longer, schedule a few more patients, instead of taking that half day off for administrative issues, see more patients. But God has to guide you on how much is enough, because in our society, that materialistic siren song out there to earn more and more has to have a limit. And we'll talk a little more shortly about simplicity and contentment, which is a big part of that. And let's look at Jesus' example. And you might want to turn to this real quick. We won't read through it all, but Mark 1, 21 through 38 talks about Jesus' ministry. And, you know, they were really amazed when the people in those days, when they saw what Jesus could do. A lot of it had to do with his healing ministry. Verse 34, he healed many who were ill with various diseases and cast out many demons. And he wasn't permitting the demons to speak. And this is a verse I referred to earlier, Mark 1:35. And in the early morning, while it was still dark, he arose and went out and departed to a lonely place and was praying there, again, seeking that priority from God, his Father. And verse 37, they found him and said to him, everyone's looking for you. Boy, I can relate to that. You know, you're seeing a patient and the beeper's going off and they're knocking on the door with a call from the emergency room. Everybody's looking for you. But Jesus' response was interesting. He said to them, let's go somewhere else, to the towns nearby, in order that I may preach there also, for that is what I came for. So I think we get a real clear picture that Jesus operated based on priorities. He didn't heal all the ill people. He didn't cast out all the demons. He did what he was led to do to provide the power of the kingdom and God's hand on his ministry. But he didn't let himself become overwhelmed by the urgent. And by the way, Tyranny of the Urgent is a little booklet. I have a copy here. You can find that in Mardell's bookstore in Oklahoma City, other Christian bookstores. And these rocks that we're talking about, these non-negotiables, urgent things come along. And in the short term, it's very easy to neglect the rocks because the urgent things are louder. For instance, most of us can go a long time without eating. But eventually, hypoglycemia sets in, all the alarms and whistles go off, we feel terrible, and we have to eat. So nutrition is a rock, it's a priority, we need that. We can put it off for a while, but indefinitely. Not indefinitely. Sleep's another issue. We can go without sleep for a certain amount of time, it differs for each of us. And that's a rock. We need adequate rest, as the verse I shared earlier. We can do without for a short time, but long term, if as a habit we're not getting enough sleep, then the urgent is crowding out something important in our life. And then you think about relationships, and the application becomes even more clear. Our kids, you know, we can go to extra meetings at night and in the morning and earn extra money, and we can ignore them for, you know, a week or two to kind of get through a project, and, you know, that's probably okay. But if we do that week after week and year after year, then we're going to pay a price, and more than that, our kids are going to pay a price because they need fathers who are there physically and emotionally. You can't really plan that. You can't really schedule that in. You've just got to be there, hang out, be available. A lot of the time, you can't just say, okay, kid time is Saturday afternoon. Issues don't always come up on Saturday. So I would urge you to think that one through very carefully as you're thinking what rocks should remain in the jar. So you can neglect the important things for the urgent things in the short term, but if it's a pattern and a habit, then you need to back up and take a closer look. Another example about that Jesus would provide for us is in John 11. Let's turn there. For some reason, I always want to say this with a lisp, Lazarus, but it's Lazarus. But it's the story about Mary and Martha and Lazarus. And in verse 6, it's interesting. He heard about this issue, and when he heard that his friend was sick, he stayed 2 days longer in the place where he was. So you kind of think he was avoiding the urgent so he could accomplish the important. What's the important? Well, verse 4 is a clue. When Jesus heard of it, he said, "This sickness is not unto death, but for the glory of God, that the Son of Man may be glorified by it." And in verse 42, "And I knew that thou hearest me always, but because of the people standing around it, I said it, that they may believe those who did, that they may believe, I'm sorry, may believe that thou didst send me." So Jesus operated by priorities, and there was an emotional price to be paid, both by him and obviously by Lazarus, poor guy. Can you imagine? He stinketh. But that God could be glorified. So Christ is our example. We need to not neglect the important because of the urgent. Restoring time margin. Our time is getting short, but let me wade through some of these. Again, this is primarily from Dr. Swenson's book, We Should Expect the Unexpected. A proverb in Ecuador says, everything takes longer than it does. And I think we can identify with that. It's like a Yogi Berra said, no matter where you go, there you are. So it's one of those things. Everything takes longer than it does. Learn to say no, and this is really probably one of the most important skills you can learn. You need to have a to-do list and a to-don't list. And if we're operating by priorities, we need to say no and realize we're not being selfish. We're simply applying the truth of God's word and making our choices and decisions. And we need to receive that when other people tell us no, for crying out loud. You know, don't be disappointed and call them uncommitted, at least not just for that reason, because you hope they're listening to God before they give you that answer. Number three, turn off the whatever, TV, email, cell phone, computer. First night I got here, a gentleman named Steve Trice, I just met him, he's a businessman from Oklahoma City. He's in electronics business, has international connections, ramifications, ministries, whatever. He's a busy guy. And I asked him, when he goes on vacation, does he just, you know, shut off the email? And he said no, because he gets 40 important emails a day that he has to respond to. And so if he's gone for 10 days, he comes back, he's got 400 things to respond to. So what he does, he hour a day on vacation, even on a cruise recently, he'll go, you know, get hooked up, you know, work through the email. But the rest of the 23 hours of the day, it's not turned on. He's not worrying about it. He's not accessing it. So that's an example. This is great technology. It can make us more time efficient. It can multiply our efforts. But it needs to be managed in order to maintain the relationship. In this case, the relationship with his family, who he was on vacation with. So I thought that was an excellent example. Prune the activity branches, that goes without saying. Practice simplicity and contentment. Everything we have owns us and extracts its pound of flesh. And I think you guys know what I'm talking about. At one point, my wife and I, well, actually, as our kids were growing up, my in-laws had a place at Grand Lake in Oklahoma, almost 3 hours away, and many times we enjoy, especially Scott and I, we really enjoyed going and fishing and spending time with Grandpa and doing all those things. But as he got older, he couldn't handle that as well, and so the opportunity came up that we could just kind of take that place over, not have to spend a dime, but just, you know, if we became responsible for upkeep, we could hang on to it. And my wife helped me in that decision. Because I was emotionally attached, and I really wanted to kind of hang on to it. But, I mean, it was almost 3 hours away, and, you know, an ice storm would come through, and branches would come down. You'd have to, you know, go check on it. And it was, you know, kind of an insecure area. But it just, you know, from a larger perspective, wasn't worth it. At that point, we had enjoyed it, and so we kind of let that opportunity pass us by. We pruned that branch, and I'm glad we did at this point, because there are many times when I've been strung out since then. I thought, at least, you know, we don't have another place to look after. And that's not saying that's the right decision for everyone out here. I mean, if you have a chance to, you know, have a place to go fishing, well, you know, that may be great. But it depends on your capacity and your finances. And, you know, many people in that circumstance can pay someone to look after it for them, and that's great. That's multiplying your efforts. But think it through and prune the activity branches and the possession branches. there's so much about simplicity and contentment. Kent referred to it the other night in his talk, and that's probably a whole other talk, a lot of which has to do with finances, but with clothing and shelter and food, we really should be content, and everything else really is negotiable beyond that. Separating time from technology is a lot about the same thing of turning things off when you have the opportunity to do so. Short-term flurry versus long-term vision, we've talked about that in terms of short-term, intermediate, long-term goals. Thank God for overruling our plans. And again, the mind of man plans his way, but the Lord directs his steps. So we do all this with the idea that God's ultimately in control, and he needs to, of course, have the ability to change your plans. Sabotage your fuse box. We had a power outage in Oklahoma City. It was a power outage, but it was mainly an ice storm. And we couldn't go to the office for about 2 days. And it was interesting how that does kind of refocus your priorities. We had a lot of great family time during the time the power was out. We, you know, actually played board games, things where you communicate with people and look them in the eye, and that communicated something, that experience. Get less done, but do the right things. We've talked about that. Enjoy anticipation. Relish the memories. Instead of planning more, think more about what you're doing. Plan ahead. Enjoy it going forward. Enjoy it in memories, things like family vacations. Don't rush wisdom. Wait for clarity in making major decisions. The more important it is, probably the more time we should spend in thinking it through and praying it through. And for type A's only, stand in line. Have you all ever done that? You're busy, and then you realize, I think I'll just stand in a longer line this time. Have you ever actually done that? I've done that recently. It's freeing. It's kind of like, okay, God's in control, and I let these people go. I'm doing a good thing. And really, if you're a type A personality, try that. It's refreshing. It's also pretty unusual because I don't usually do that. But try standing in the longest line. And then be available. And this basically reflects the point I've already made, that margin exists for the kingdom. Question, am I interruptible? God never intended for time to oppress us. Instead, time was simply his way of making sure that everything didn't happen all at the same time. Can you imagine if everything just happened at the same time? I mean, we have a hard time with our finite mind and timelines figuring out what's going on. Boy, if it happened, it was with God, days is 1,000 years, we can't handle that. So God's protecting us by setting the sun and moon and earth in their orbits. So Matthew 13, that's a typo, by the way, that last scripture there, Matthew 13, 45 and 46. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant seeking fine pearls, and upon finding one pearl of great value, he went and sold all that he had and bought it. And that's kind of the ultimate rock, isn't it? The one pearl. And so we want to be giving our life for that and not the sand and the water and the pebbles. Time-wise, we have just 5 minutes. I'd like to brainstorm a little bit and have you guys help me fill out this list here on the back about top 10 time wasters. And these don't have to be deep philosophical things. Some of them might be very practical suggestions. But again, brainstorming, top 10 energy drains or time wasters. What do you think?
TV,
television, okay. Yeah, I spend a lot of time doing that. Computer in general. I mean, when I turn the computer on, my homepage is Yahoo, whatever, and there's the news there. And before I get my errand run on the computer, I've usually followed that train several different branches, and I'm more educated, but haven't gotten my priority done, whatever I was looking for. So, internet is, again, it's a wonderful tool, but it can be a real time waster. Other things.
In my office, I have 2 chairs in front of me, and I sometimes have to put things in the chairs before I go to the copy room. Sometimes I leave things in the chairs for days at a time, and people stand when they come into my office.
Okay.
And they talk faster.
Okay. That's a good, yeah. Yeah, that's a tip. Yeah, and obviously, the opposite of these is the time saver, is spend less time watching TV, well, that's time saver, but as a time waster. Yeah, taking on extra responsibility when you don't need to.
Maybe a leisure activity that ends up becoming an occupation.
Yeah, a leisure activity that
is a time where, to relieve stress,
right.
And you end up,
right.
Like me, type A,
Right.
Begin to making that, almost making that as much an occupation as you do.
Yeah, balance issue. I mean, we need recreation, we need rest, we need diversion, but we also need to use our time wisely. And if these things are taking over, we probably ought to put the brakes on. Any other thoughts? Right off top of your head? Just for your consideration, one huge time waster is alienate your wife and kids. Again, going back to, you know, lives that are on the rocks, you've seen the stories. You know people that have made bad decisions, and they've messed up their marriage, and they've messed up their relationship with their kids. And how much time does that take to sort all that out? Sometimes the rest of their life, and it still isn't sorted out. So live in obedience to the Word in terms of these principles about relationships, and that'll save you some time. Believe me, I see it every day in my office. Becoming unequally yoked, even in business, that's a real time drain. Believe me. Becoming addicted to anything, whether it's leisure or pornography on the internet or whatever, is a real waster. Worry, we alluded to that earlier. Do not be anxious for anything, but in everything by prayer and supplication, Philippians 4, 6, and 7. So we shouldn't worry. That's waste our time. Indecision, Joel 3:10, says, swing the sickle, for the harvest is ripe. And for some decisions, there is a timeline. And if God has led us to do it, we just ought to do it and not, you know, go through 10 versions of thinking another thought. Perfection is a time drain, Ecclesiastes 11:4. If you wait for perfect conditions, you'll never get anything done. And that's exactly right. So thank you all, and have a good supper.